Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 3:26 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is June 27th, and I thought we'd kick off with the China Enterprises Index in Hong Kong. It went to a new 3-month high in here today. It wasn't quite able to hold on to all of the gain during the day, but it has now unwound all of the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. So we're at a point of significant decision making here for the Chinese shares listed in Hong Kong, and probably the same for those that are listed in the USA. And they have been leading on the upside. So there aren't really many markets that are making new 3-month highs. We've seen a really significant upper dynamic on Wall Street on Friday, and struggling to hold on to all of it in here today. But certainly nothing in the way of clear downward dynamics either. So investors are willing to bet at least that the worst of tightening is behind us in China, and that perhaps the Federal Reserve isn't going to be able to raise rates quite as much as they're signaling in the USA. But I thought it might be interesting to look at some of these charts. So the leading advancer in here today was Xiaomi, and that was up about 12.5%. So this is a really quite pronounced downtrend, and this now has broken that downtrend. There was a very clear and persistent decline, so the trend line's been broken. Now, we haven't quite broken the succession of lower rally highs yet, but it is pushing up into the overhead trading range, and it hasn't done that before. So the downtrend is no longer consistent, and it's at least demonstrating near-term support. And it's also because phone sales in China have begun to pick up a little bit. Then there's also been a significant upward dynamic in JD Health. That's also a very similar pattern where we have this really quite pronounced downtrend, and then subsequently just a pop on the upside here. And we can look at plenty of back history. There's been really a rivetingly consistent downtrend since the IPO, or at least shortly after the IPO, but it is now back above the 200-day moving average. And I think it's interesting that these digital health companies peaked in China well before what we've seen elsewhere. And Alibaba Healthcare has got a really eerily similar pattern to Xiaomi. So there's been a really significant sell-off in just about all of the larger cap techie companies within China. Now, JD.com is back above its 200-day moving average, and it was among the better advancers in Hong Kong today, but wasn't really able to follow through on the upside. Now, then the big outstanding question, of course, is what happens with the property market? And for China, this is an awfully big question. Now, there have been a significant number of the property developers have gone bust or are still trading at really low levels, but Longfor Group has been able to hold on to the majority of its gains over the last few years, and it's steadying from the lower side of its range. Then, what I think is also interesting is that the solar sector is very weak, and Xinyi Solar was among the weakest performers on the H shares in here today. And this isn't really an attractive chart pattern. We still have the sequence of lower rally highs, and it's continuing to go down against a background of high oil prices. And you'd have to think, or at least it's certainly on the back of my mind, why isn't solar doing better when we have oil prices that are climbing from the $110 level on Brent crude and for West Texas Intermediate, also firming and approaching that 110 level. So it's very much about interest rates. The business model for large numbers of these solar companies are very interest rate sensitive, And bond yields have been quite volatile, but they were pushing higher again in here today, bouncing from the 3% level. So investors aren't quite yet willing to give away, or to give up, I should say, on the belief that the Federal Reserve isn't just going to continue to push on and raise rates. And then it's, I think, also rather interesting that a number of the defense companies are bouncing from the upper side of their respective underlying ranges. So Lockheed Martin has a similar pattern overall to Northrop Grumman or Raytheon. They're all bouncing from previous areas of support and have pretty much all sustained their breakouts from multi-year ranges. This is, of course, implying that defense spending is going to increase rather significantly. And it's not all that difficult to understand why. When countries like the USA and many of the other NATO participants are sending Javelin rockets and Stinger missiles to Ukraine, and the Ukrainian resistance are going through those munitions at a very healthy clip. Well, it's going to start putting pressure on manufacturing capacity. Well, that's going to be a concern for Taiwan. The Taiwanese market has been pulling back in line with the wider semiconductors index. GlobalWafers said today that they're going to build a wafer factory in the USA. It'll be the biggest wafer factory built in the US since, or at least in the last 20 years. And the SOX index is right back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and we're starting to see a little bit of evidence of support starting to come through. But I think we need to see bigger upward dynamics. When we look at the Nasdaq, it's back around the 12,000 level. 1,000-point rallies are not all that surprising. And by the close on Friday, my latest short position was trading in negative territory. It's back in positive territory by the close today. But so far, this doesn't look like the kind of clear upward dynamic that we would be able to hang our hat on and say this is the end of this bull market, or excuse me, of this corrective phase. One thing that I am concerned by is the weakness of small caps. Usually, these types of companies, they're not as interest rate sensitive, but they've pulled back exceptionally violently. And they're below the 1,000-day moving average, but pausing in the region of the lower side, or excuse me, the upper side of the underlying trading range as well. So there's certainly scope for some further steadying, but until we see clear evidence that the Federal Reserve is in fact relenting from raising interest rates, then it's going to be a rather difficult environment. Then let's turn our attention to what's going on in Europe. The G7 meeting is on in Bavaria, and it's looking really incredibly scenic at this time of the year. And there's protests underway to try and encourage G7 politicians to follow through on their climate commitments. But I would have to think that there's also a strong argument for the fact that we're in a very tight energy environment in Europe. And the front month futures for natural gas are still rising and very close to all-time highs. And we know also that the Nord Stream 2 pipe, or excuse me, Nord Stream 1 pipeline is closed right now for some maintenance. And I think it's more than a 50% likelihood that Russia isn't going to open it up again. Europe has already told them what they want to do. They don't want to buy any more Russian gas by the end of the year. So, what's Russia really going to lose out on by simply deciding that they're not going to sell it to them? And that is going to be exceptionally problematic. And We can think about big industrial companies in Europe. Think ArcelorMittal is a good example. It's a steel producer. It's one of the biggest steel producers in the world. It's got clear type 2 top formation characteristics. It's a failed upside break, a lengthier period of ranging, massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It wouldn't be at all surprising to see some ranging between current levels and the 200-day moving average. But the reality is that steel production is energy intensive. And the focus of the modern steel industry, particularly in Europe and in North America, has been on electric arc furnaces. So electricity consumption is paramount. They don't have quite the same intensity of coking coal. They rely on recycled steel for the coke. But then they basically transfer dependence on metallurgical coal to dependence on electricity. Well, since most of the electricity that they are going to be buying comes from natural gas and natural gas prices are rising, well, one would have to think that there is going to be a really significant differential between the performance of European industrials and those of North American or Asian industrials. But then I think it's more likely than not that we're going to have the US industrials outperforming because they have a competitive advantage in the somewhat lower price of natural gas. Well, Cleveland Cliffs bought ArcelorMittal's US steel operations. And they have the iron ore mining capacity in North America. They have the generating capacity. They have their own coal mines. And the share has pulled back even more violently than ArcelorMittal has. So we're just not seeing this differentiation coming through in how investors are willing to look at these markets just yet. But I do suspect that that kind of differentiated way of looking at markets is coming, because of these unique threats that are being posed to companies all over the world. So when we think about the nature of this correction, one way to think about it is that it's about earnings. And earnings haven't really fallen a lot yet, but we're at the end of the second quarter, and it's been a difficult quarter. Lots of instruments have fallen a lot, and particularly bonds and equities have fallen together. And I hazard a guess that a lot of the buying that we had at the end of the week last week was because of book squaring activity at the end of the quarter. But we're still in an environment which has a lot of uncertainty. So earnings are a big question, and when we start going through the earnings season, really starting in less than 10 days, then we have this event risk because of the war in Ukraine and its potential to intensify. There's no real evidence of willingness to sit down and talk, and this suggests that there is potential for escalation. So that's going to continue to have or to act as a drag on the European economy. So the DAX index is now it's steady in the region of the lows from back in the early part of this year, but isn't there's nothing in the way of upward dynamics, and it does look increasingly likely that we're going to go lower before we see evidence of support starting to come through. Now, the UK has somewhat lower energy prices, and the FTSE 250 though is in the region of its low, so not quite above it. And this is really the do or die moment. It's either going to hold the low and extend this rebound over the course of the last few days, subsequently push back above the 20,000 level and establish itself above there, or it's going to fail, and we're going to take another leg lower. So I think these are important considerations. When we think about the currency markets, well, the British pound is hovering here at the lower side of its range. The dollar has been especially strong because the Federal Reserve is raising rates faster than anybody else, even though other central banks are starting to catch up. And the rate of the interest rate differential widening is declining. Well, it's still widening overall. And that's not creating a great deal of enthusiasm for anything other than the dollar right now. Now, when we think about Australia, I think there are a number of competing factors. The first is inflationary pressures are starting to pick up, and that's not all that surprising considering the length of the lockdown and the extent to which the Australian population feel cabin fever and want to go out and do the same kind of revenge spending that everywhere else has done. And that's bumping up against the fall in commodity prices and then the lack of excessive demand for those commodities. But the ASX 200 was in positive territory today and bouncing emphatically from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, again, this has type 2 top formation characteristics. So we have the lengthier range, we have failed breaks above the psychological 7,500, massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And again, it's not unsurprising in this kind of environment to see a period of ranging between about 6,500 and 7,000 before we subsequently see another leg lower. So we're certainly in a more risky environment overall. We've begun to see some short covering rallies starting to come through, but at least a period of support building will be required to demonstrate more than a very short-term low. And if central banks defy the expectations of the market and continue to raise rates into declining growth, well, it would be normal then to anticipate that stock markets will take an additional leg lower. One thing that I find interesting, I don't personally feel comfortable that I generally find myself in the position of being the only bull in the room. And right now, I find that there are a lot of people that are not willing to give up on the bullish ideal. I'll be a lot happier when I see that there's a bearish consensus. But I still see a lot of people that are very eager to buy the dip. And and certainly that's worked over the course of the last 3 or 4 days in markets. But there's still this issue with Bitcoin not following through on the upside. It's still hovering here around the 20,000 level. And this inert range is really not all that different from the inert range that we saw in May. And we still have sequences of ranges one below another. And Bitcoin is a liquidity barometer. So with the threat of interest rate hikes and the threat that the Federal Reserve is going to reduce the size of their balance sheet by over 2 trillion, then it's hard to imagine how Bitcoin is going to rally into that environment. But we're also in the cyclical period of Bitcoin where we should anticipate that we're going to get weaker prices. It's when we come closer to the halving in 2024 and 6 months prior to that event where we could anticipate that the cryptocurrency might bottom. And that bottom would probably coincide with a lot easier policy from central banks. At least that's been the pattern over the course of the last 12 years. So I don't think we're out of the woods just yet. Then, when we think about the industrial metals, well, copper prices are in mildly positive territory in here today. They got up as high as 380 and then were just not able to hold the move. So investors are wondering whether we're going to have an economic contraction and whether that will be enough to curtail inflation so that central banks can reduce interest rates. Of course, that's hoping, in other words, that we will not have a stagflationary environment. Now, the Baltic Dry Index is pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. So we have not yet seen the big surge on the upside that would be commensurate with a lot of supply chain issues and excessive demand. The reality is that it's peaked already. So this is potentially also a lead indicator for what looks to be inevitably a recession. Now, that recession question is also being discussed in markets, and a lot of people are anticipating that it will be a shallow one, even though we have the Federal Reserve saying that achieving a soft landing is going to be very difficult. And these people are not miracle workers. We've had an enormous amount of money printed. Now we're starting to see that money getting taken out, and it means that prices will come back down. And that suggests that there will be opportunities available. Not everything is going to suffer in the same way. And we're definitely seeing that China is beginning to turn around because of the domestic liquidity situation and the fact that Xi Jinping has said that China is going to hit its growth target. So, if China is going to hit its growth target and hold on to its COVID zero policy, it means they have to print more liquidity. So that's why stock markets there are starting to turn. But the war in Ukraine, the difficulties in Europe, and the intention of the Federal Reserve to remove liquidity all are weighing on the ability of stocks and commodities in particular to rebound. Of course, gold prices have been also really very inert. And we're down by about $4 in here today, having been in positive territory in early trading. The big question for gold is whether it can rally when other commodities are falling in price. And it's still holding the $1,800 area. We can think about what the longer term is, and that ultimately central banks are going to have to debase the currencies to deal with the debts. But we're not seeing that right now because of these outstanding fears about inflation. And that suggests that gold may not be immune from volatility in the stock market, and not least because people see an asset that's up on the year. And there really aren't many that are up on the year so far. So that also means that if stocks pull back, then people will sell instruments they have profits in. So I continue to watch this $1,800 area because that's where the most recent higher reaction low is, and there's been a clear succession of higher major reaction lows for a year. I'll be a lot happier if those hold. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.